Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You, Public Radio's game with words, which harkens back to those golden days in school.
Chewing gum online. I hope you brought enough for everyone. That's great.
Perhaps no other show in radio knows so well how to hold open the door of knowledge to an intellectual audience.
I think the issue is not whether you should hold it open or not, but at what point do you close it?
Do you notice how Tony hasn't added a lot to this category? This week we feature polite conversation about the rules of etiquette. In particular, elevator etiquette.
I thought it had something to do with flatulence, and I'm just so happy that you blame the guy that just got off. It works for me.
So for the next hour, guard your radio, because, you know,
if it fell into the hands of the communists,
says you, next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy is the latest public figure to call for new gun control measures following Friday's mass shooting at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown.
These are assault weapons. You don't hunt deer with these things. And I think that's the question that a lot of people are going to have to resolve in their own mind. Where should this line get drawn?
Malloy, speaking on CNN's State of the Union this morning on NBC, he said he hopes a national conversation about mental illness comes out of what happened in his state. On Friday, President Obama called for meaningful action to prevent such tragedies. He's traveling to Newtown today to meet with victims' family members and to speak at an interfaith memorial service this evening. People have been filing into the churches of Newtown. NPR's Susanna George reports that faith leaders there are struggling just as much as their congregations to make sense of the shootings.
St. Joseph's Church sits up slightly from one of Sandy Hook's main roads. Its red double doors have been mostly open since Friday's tragedy. The pastor there, Mark Moore, is still grappling with what happened.
And the only way to understand this is through an understanding of good and evil. This is transcends. The only way to explain it is in religious terms.
Just down the road from St. Joseph's is United Methodist. Parishioners there stand at the doors to ask media to keep a distance. Inside, a solitary usher clears props from the pulpit after this weekend's rehearsal for the annual Christmas pageant was canceled. Susanna George, NPR News, Danbury, Connecticut.
According to unofficial results, voters in Egypt in the first round of a referendum have approved a controversial draft constitution. But as NPR's Soraya Sarhadi Nelson reports from Cairo, most voters in the Egyptian capital cast a no vote.
The Egyptian government will not announce official results until after the final stage of the referendum next Saturday. The counts emerging are from individual polling stations. But the Muslim Brotherhood reported on its website that nearly 77% voted in favor of the draft constitution. A major rival political party, the secular Al-Waft, reported passage with a smaller majority of 57%. Turnout was so high in some areas like Cairo that election officials extended polling station hours. Several voting irregularities were reported, including invalid ballots and voters not being allowed into polling stations. Also, the turnout reported by the Brotherhood suggested far fewer voters cast ballots than appeared to be the case. Soraya Sarhadi Nelson, NPR News, Cairo.
In Japan, exit polls show voters there have returned the conservative Liberal Democratic Party to power. Japanese voted in parliamentary elections today. Media surveys show the LDP, led by former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, winning a convincing majority in the parliament's lower house. The defeat has prompted Prime Minister Yoshihiko Noda to resign as leader of the Democratic Party of Japan. This is NPR News. South African President Jacob Zuma has been addressing delegates of the governing National African Congress on the first day of a conference to elect the party's leadership. Mr. Zuma, who faces allegations of misusing public funds, urged delegates to re-elect him as leader. The BBC's Milton Kosi is at the conference.
The African National Congress President Jacob Zuma has begun addressing the conference in Mangaung, the very town where the ANC was founded 100 years ago. Delivering his political report, he told the 5,000 delegates packed under a huge and hot tent that the party must fight the cancer of corruption plaguing the country. He also listed a number of successes achieved by the party since he was elected 5 years ago, including the progress on the fight against HIV and AIDS.
The BBC's Milton Kosi reporting. The Big East College Football Conference is undergoing some big changes. NPR's Jim Hawk reports that 7 non-football schools in the Big East are leaving to pursue a new setup for basketball.
The presidents of Georgetown, St. John's, Villanova, DePaul, Marquette, Seton Hall, and Providence announced the change Saturday afternoon. Georgetown's athletic director Lee Reed says the move to leave the Big East, which was formed in 1979, comes after a lot of consideration.
After multiple conversations and a lot of thought to this, we think it's the right time for us to do what we're doing, both as Georgetown University and with the other six institutions in the Big East.
The move leaves Connecticut, Cincinnati, and South Florida still in the Big East, with six new members joining next season, including Boise State and San Diego State for football. Jim Hawk, NPR News.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Pew Charitable Trusts, working with states to improve voting systems and the electoral process at pewtrusts.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Syracuse, New York comes from the WRVO stations in Syracuse and Oswego, from Syracuse University, and from the Genesee Grand Hotel, where Says You stays in Syracuse and on the web at GeneseeGrand.com.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From the stage of the Palace Theater on James in Syracuse, New York, welcome to Says You. A simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. If truth, in fact, is beauty, meet the prettiest gal in town, Lenore Shannon.
Oh, Richard.
If a little learning is a dangerous thing, here's the baddest kid on the block, Murray Horowitz. And if the road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom, he'll take a suite in the tower, Mr. Tony Khan. All right, who's going to step up?
Captain.
Oh, you're captain.
Murray.
Okay, Murray.
We'll be the captain. To my left, team two. She reflected when driving through Verona. Oh, that's where the gentlemen live. Paula Lyons. Gee. She always thought Onondaga was a heck of a good name for a lake. Carolyn Fay Fox. And he finds himself tonight way south of Smartville and heading toward Waterloo, Mr. Arnie Raceman.
Never south.
No, no. All right, who's going to lead?
Juliet.
Paula?
She was also in Verona.
Yes, right. Yes. Paula will lead. Look out, Murray.
Yes. Paula.
I surrender, dear.
Well, Captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners grab a pen, grab some paper. Let's begin with some rules of etiquette. In order to be...
I didn't say your excuse.
Yes, physical comedy on radio, ladies and gentlemen. I don't even know how to explain it. Carolyn,
yes.
In order to be classically correct, when is the right time to leave a party?
When is the right time to leave a party? Well, you want to leave a party. You don't want to be the first one to leave, but you don't want to be the last to leave when your host is wearing pajamas.
Always a bad sign.
True.
Always a bad sign. So what kind of a party are we talking about, Richard?
That's actually to the point. There is a...
Well, if it's a dinner party, you do want to stay for dessert, but you don't want to linger too long.
That's true, and you're getting points for all of this.
Are you also asking about a cocktail?
If it's a cocktail party, you stay for about an hour.
Let me ask you.
Oh, no, you don't.
Well, I wasn't talking about
stay,
Laura's
not stream.
Party.
You know, it's interesting because some of these come from a book that was written in 1897.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I said classic.
1897. Leave before they invent television.
Yes. And it used to be that parties had a guest of honor. What do you think was the rule with regard to that?
You don't leave before the guest of honor.
Never leave before the guest of honor.
Right.
But when do you leave?
After the guest of honor, right. Shortly thereafter.
Before the guest of honor.
Because when the guest of honor leaves, the party is over.
Yes, that is true. Now, in the absence of a guest of honor, I love this phrasing. See if you can come anywhere close. When should you leave the party? Lenore, what do you think?
You leave a party when you're having a good time. When you have hit the pinnacle of having a good time, that is the time. Exit stage left.
You leave that before you are the good time that has been had.
Yes, indeed.
10 points. Give it a 10 point. You got to hear this. This is right out of 1897. In the absence of a guest of honor, you should determine the point at which there's, quote, a consistent lessening of animation.
Yeah.
So when the host passes out.
Yeah. So in other words, before the first snore.
Yeah, exactly. When you notice there's a consistent lessening of animation, thank the host and blow. I love that phrase. I thought that was great. All right, Tony, try this one. 10 points for that. Try this one, Tony. You're getting married at noon. What should you not be wearing?
Yeah. A dress. First thing that comes to mind.
Not wearing
some color.
A tuxedo.
You never wear a tuxedo.
You don't wear a tuxedo. Are we still in 1897?
Well, these are the classic laws. Yeah. Okay. So some of them, yeah. But
you're getting married before
you wear a white
noon.
Dinner jacket in the afternoon or a morning coat in the morning, but you don't
wear a morning coat up until 5 p.m.
You know something? She's exactly right. Very good. Or a formal suit.
I've been married a few times, so I I got that one down.
You can also wear a formal suit if the wedding is less than traditionally formal, but you cannot wear a tuxedo or tails.
And morning suit is spelled with a U.
Yeah, well.
With good reason.
Try this one, Arnie. You should be good at this.
Yeah, sure.
What is considered, quote, fashionably late, unquote.
Fashionably late.
It's at least an hour.
Wearing something that was designed in 1897.
Yes.
Yeah, right. Fashionably late.
Fashionably late.
I think it's more than an hour after the time the party was called to begin.
No, I think fashionably late is 15, 20 minutes.
Again, if you're talking, there's a big difference if they're serving dinner or just serving drinks.
Well, address each instance.
Well, for serving dinner, I think that you can be fashionably late by maybe 10 or 15 minutes.
That's exactly right, incidentally. Okay. It's 10 minutes. 10 minutes is
otherwise, I'm going to drop the pot roast on your head.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Arnie's done that to one of our guests.
You know what? You're so late, you might as well not come.
In the case of a dinner invitation, one may arrive up to 10 minutes late.
Right.
In case the chef is not quite ready any later, it could get cold. It's unacceptable.
Unless you're in Argentina.
Yes. How about cocktails?
Cocktails, I would imagine that if it's a party that's supposed to be going on for 3 or 4 hours, you can come an hour into it.
You can, but in to be really correct about it.
A half hour.
Half hour?
Yeah, 20 to 30 minutes is the outside limit of how late you should be.
You come to one of my cocktail parties 20, 30 minutes, I'm not going to recognize you. Guaranteed. Never happened.
And how about fashionably late to theater?
Oh, well, that's kind of a bizarre.
They don't let you in.
I mean, you should be there before the curtain goes up.
That's exactly right. 10 all points. Right. You guys know your manners.
Manners.
They actually put a number on it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What's the number?
In the case of the theater, 3 minutes into the overture is the absolute limit.
That's
of
if it's a musical.
Right. Remember overtures?
Yeah, I remember overtures. Yeah. I made a few of them. Didn't work out.
It's because you were 3 minutes late. Yeah. 3 minutes late. And for that, I got a soft-boiled egg.
Now, here's the one. I'm giving this to Lenore for a reason. This is the one we're going to get the most mail on. I guarantee it. Lenore, when should you not tip a waiter or a waitress?
Really?
When should you not tip a waiter or a waitress?
Wait a minute. You're supposed to tip waiters and waitresses?
Good one.
Well, you should never not tip a waiter or a waitress, even if... Well, first of all, tip, let's just talk about tip for a minute. To ensure promptness was the original acronym of a tip. So many years ago, you would give the money up front in the way you would do now to get a better table at a place or, you know, little $20 here or there makes a big difference sometimes.
That's called a bribe.
A little bit, yeah, it is. But it... Giving it up front makes them think that maybe there's more coming on the heels of it, you know?
It's kind of like an engagement. So,
well, I would say... I want to say one thing. So, first of all, your answer of never is exactly right. Mm. There is never a time when you should not tip a waiter or a waitress.
No.
But do you want to qualify it? For the 10 points, you need to qualify it a little bit. Just
qualify it in what way? Is there a certain... Well, you can... Don't have to leave the full amount, the suggested amount of a minimum of 15%. You could leave the bare minimum of 15%.
You can undertip if it's been terrible service.
You know something? You can undertip. But why should you never not tip?
Because they're not paid enough.
Well, that's not the reason, actually. That is not the reason. That may be true.
Terrible things could happen to you the next time you go back.
That also is
possible. Take a good look at your food the next time you go back.
Yeah. There is never a time when you should not tip,
right?
Even if the service is horrible. Because not leaving anything could be interpreted that you simply forgot.
Forgot.
Yeah.
So
and
you
that's
you
not
send
what you
a message.
Want to do.
The tip is the message.
Yes, a 10 or in rare cases a 5% tip is a symbolic thumbs down. But one assumes that part of the labor of a meal is service, and a tip should never be completely ignored, even in the case of buffets. And try this one, Paula. In business etiquette, what is the elevator rule?
The elevator rule in business.
Who gets on or off?
Yeah, it has something to do with who's allowed on or off for a second or third.
Is it about personal space?
No, not really. I don't want to take you in that direction.
Is it about talking on the elevator?
In a
way. Oh, well, yes. You would never reveal any private information.
Until when?
Until you leave.
Until you leave the elevator. Of course.
That is exactly right. Never, never discuss your impressions of a meeting with colleagues until you have reached the ground floor and exited the building. This is true even if you are the only ones in the elevator. And finally, Murray, when should a gentleman hold the door for a lady?
I should know.
I want two answers here. There's a classic etiquette and also today's.
Not when it's a revolving door.
Yeah, right. Let me get the door for you.
But that's actually correct. That's actually correct. That's actually correct. A gentleman should go first through a revolving door.
That is true.
But because
in my career,
you create the momentum
many of them.
Exactly.
For it. Yeah.
You're doing the work.
Right.
You always hold the door for a lady.
That is not true. Not in classic etiquette.
You do.
The gentleman always went through the door first and then held the door for the lady. He did not hold the door open and allow the lady to go through first. It was opposite. But in modern times, it's different. What's the rule?
I think you hold the door for the lady unless the lady opens the door.
I think the car thing has gone by the wayside. I think that you don't run around to the side of the car anymore.
And it does seem to be.
I think the issue is not whether you should hold it open or not, but at what point do you close it?
Oh,
Do you notice how Tony hasn't added a lot to this category? I don't think. But I'm going to give you 7 points for that.
That's it?
Yeah, because the one thing is, in modern times, the first person to the door should hold it for the other. That is the rule.
Well,
it no longer applies that the gentleman...
So why didn't you hold the door for me tonight when you were...
No, wait just a minute.
We'll take the 7 points.
Okay, 7 points.
We'll take this offline.
Yep. Let's go on to round two, shall we? Which is played with a little musical help from the international guitar duo of Lauren and Mark. It's the first of the Says You Bluffing rounds. Paula, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot. Good enough to fool these idiots over here. I'm so sorry. That was impolite, wasn't it?
Not in 1897.
I guess not. 10 points up for grabs to Murray if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Paula, if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word avalement. A-V-A-L-E-M-E-N-T. Avalement.
It's an alto.
Gentlemen? As we approach the holiday season, we just have to ask, have you even started shopping? We're not talking Dad and the twins here, we're talking work, the club, and pets. Well, what could be a more thoughtful gift than a sizzling copy of Says Us, hot off the press? You got volumes 1 and 2, games for all to play, perfect for traveling. Picture this, you're on the pike and hit a 15-mile backup at Bridgeport. Here's 2 volumes, 20 games each to pass the time. Information at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. Stop by and contribute a question to the show while you're there. I dare you. Says You returns after this from home. Cleveland Hadley's writes, if I miss one of your shows, what, oh, what can I do? Well, AC, you can stream the show on one of our stations. If you go to the High Definitions Radio Stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen along. Or you can download any show from our archive. Where it says, download Says You here at the bottom of our homepage, hit here. Is the international guitar duo Lauren Barragar and Mark Mazengard. Thank you very much, you guys. That's absolutely. Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers for this game. Would you please help me thank Mr. Gus Sayer and Mr. Benjamin Scherr? Thank you guys for keeping the score. We have had a few moments with the word avowalment. We will go first to Carolyn Fay Fox.
Avowalment is a kind of breath freshener. It's not. It's a legal term. An avowalment is the full measure of money awarded to the winner of a case in land court.
The winner in land court gets the avowalment.
Yes.
Mm. Could be that. Or it could be something else. Arnie, what say you?
This sounds like we're continuing the line of Victorian manners or some sort of thing, because it seems to be the official end of a visit. The process of final farewells.
The official end of a visit, a final farewell, is an avowalment. It could be that, or it could be something else. What say you, Paula?
Well, believe it or not, many, 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 many years ago, I skied once or twice.
Ooh. In Valais?
Just even thinking about it today makes my knees hurt. But actually, this is a technique where you, when you're skiing, you bend those knees going over bumps because it helps absorb the
shock?
The shock. Exactly. So it's a skiing technique, and I would imagine you could use it on water or on snow, but it hurts my knees just to think about it.
It's a skiing technique. You use it when you're going over bumps, spares your knees. It could be that skiing technique. It could be the official end of a visit, a final farewell, or it could be what the winner gets in land court. It's one of those three things, and the choice, Murray, is yours.
A lot of this has to do with the second syllable, V-A-L-E. And I think that Paula mispronounced it veil and thought ski, and that's what she came up with. on the other hand, Wale, right?
Awe, aque, Wale. Hello and goodbye. Yeah.
Wale, famous baseball player, Wale Backman.
I thought you were going to go to Wally Moon there.
Yeah. No, no, if I were as old as you, Richard, I would have.
That's right.
But, so there is that, and I think my colleagues are persuaded that
absolutely.
That's
a valedictorian.
Absolutely.
Goodbye.
But maybe, being as brilliant as he is, Arnie knew that we would fall for that.
Could.
And it's actually a legal term, meaning the share that the winner gets at land court.
Why? What is land court?
That's true. We go for Arnie.
The share you'd get is the
that's
land.
True. That's true. Well, but that's part.
I'll see you in land court.
You and your horse.
I'll see you both in land court.
I'll land you in court. Well, that's true, which means it's so arcane.
I think you were right.
Wale,
Wale. Yeah.
Wale mente.
Goodbye.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Go with it.
We'll take the we'll take the Latin quarter, and we'll go with Arnie.
Arnie, they're taking the Latin route. They're thinking that avowalment is the official end of a visit, a final farewell.
It means you can go home from the party.
Yes.
That's right. Is that in fact what it is?
Vaya con Dios, buddies. No.
Oh!
It is a bluff. Ooh, we got a new one from the audience there.
I told you he was brilliant.
You were right.
He's brilliant.
There you go.
You were right.
All right, audience, it's your turn. What do you think?
Ski?
How many think it's what the winner gets in land court? How many of you guys are skiing over bumps? Well, no, I don't even think it's close, Carolyn. They think that an avowalment is what the winner gets in land court. Is that, in fact, what it is?
I made it up.
You certainly did. Because what it actually is...
It's a little hard to read, but anyway, a skiing technique of allowing the knees to flex and absorb bumps.
That's what it is. 10 points.
Well done.
For Paula's team.
Well done.
Bravo. Let us go on to round 3. A round of common threads. What common thread ties together the following people, places, or things? Carolyn, twist.
Ooh, really?
Thank you, madam.
Thank you.
Twist, tilt.
Tilt.
Circle.
Circle.
And stop.
Stop. Would this Which have to do with fencing?
It would not. Well, it could, but not that I'm stop. Aware of.
Twist.
What's the last word?
Oh.
Stop.
Stop.
S-T-O-P.
Stop.
Is it, are they all missing a word?
Yes.
Tilt-a-whirl.
Can you twist down? Tilt down, circle down. Stop down.
Stop down.
Stop
down. Full stop, full circle, full tilt, and full twist.
Twist. Yes.
10 points. Nice job.
Excellent.
All right. Tony, try this one.
Yes, I'm ready.
What is the common thread here?
Mm-hmm.
Wicked.
Wicked.
Scarlet.
Scarlet.
March.
March.
And Gertrude and Claudius.
Gertrude and Claudius. Well, we got Hamlet there. I have a feeling they belong that. The March, Scarlet. What's the first one again?
Wicked.
Wicked.
Which? March.
Scarlet, March, and Gertrude and Claudius.
Is it a word missing again?
No, it is not.
It's not a word missing.
Not a word missing.
No. Nothing at all like that.
All right.
Is March the month, or is it small M?
It is a capital M, but it is not the month.
Oh, a type of march. A march.
Augie March.
Scarlet is in, well,
Scarlet O'Hara.
Is
it Scarlet O'Hara?
It is.
It is Scarlet O'Hara.
Yeah.
Is it the Wicked Witch?
Oh.
Of the West? Or the East? Is it the Wicked Witch?
You know,
no,
you're
Wicked Scarlet March with a capital M and then Gertrude and Claudius.
What is a common thread that might tie all four of those together? Does the other side know? Don't say it out loud. Do you know?
No. Wicked Witch.
A civil war.
Mm. All right, I hit you with a hard one. I'm sorry. Audience, do you have any thoughts?
March Hare?
Yes, sirree. From the back of the audience.
What?
They are all follow-up books.
Follow-up books.
The Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Wicked is a follow-up book to The Wizard of Oz, dealing with the Wicked Witch. Scarlet, of course, to Gone with the Wind.
March to Little Women.
March to Little Women, yes.
And Gertrude
and Claudius, I think we got right off the top.
Skippy and Gidget.
Skippy and Gidget, that's right, to Hamlet.
Wait a minute, don't Gertrude and Claudius die at the end of Hamlet?
This is it's actually a prequel.
It goes back.
Oh,
yeah, it goes back, actually, but it's a follow-up book to those. So that was a tough one, but don't worry. They'll get tough ones, too.
Oh.
All right. Try this one, Arnie.
Mm.
Jigger.
Jigger, J?
Jigger. Spoon.
Mm-hmm.
Cleek.
Cleek?
C-L-E-E-K.
Oh, E-E-K.
And Brassie. B-R-A-S-S-I-E.
Brassie?
Oh, I know who that is.
These are measurements.
No.
They
are not.
No, they're not. Okay.
What's C-L-E-E-K?
Jigger?
Oh,
I don't know.
It's Scottish derivation.
Yep. Of course.
Well, isn't everything?
Well, a jigger, we know. It's a jigger is a measure of alcohol. A spoon is a measure.
Jigger, spoon, cleek, and Brassie.
What is a cleek?
Oh, I thought they might even get this, but
I
guess
Brassie.
Not. This is harder.
I don't know what cleek is.
B-R-A-S-S-I-E.
Yes.
So it's not brasserie.
So it's not brassy as an adjective.
No.
Murray, do you know this?
I think so.
Okay.
Are these names?
Yes, they are.
Oh, they're
names.
Okay.
Of, like, animals?
No, not animals.
Oh, there's probably athletes, right?
Nope.
Nope.
No?
Sports?
Nope.
Well, as a general category, yes.
All right.
Okay.
I think I may have
to... Oh, see, in Ireland, they play the spoons. Who plays a jigger? Anybody we know?
You're going to hate it when you hear it. You're just going to hate it. Because it is, in fact, Scottish games.
Oh, it is Scottish games. So.
Good. So how many points do we get?
Yeah. None yet.
Oh. I mean,
all right.
They have anything?
So this has to do with like, the Highland games...
No.
Absolutely no. Nothing. No. Murray, you're going to have to give it to him.
When you're batting the gutta percha around the links, you might use a spoon or a click or a...
Yes,
oh,
you
it's
would.
Golf again.
Yes, you would.
Oh, a clique is a golf club.
They are the traditional names for golf clubs.
And you'd certainly have a better accent than I have.
Yeah. The jigger is a wedge, the spoon is a high loft wood, the brassy is a two wood, and the clique is the driving iron. So that's what it is. So Murray knew it, but can't give you the points.
No, no points at all.
No. Well, you know what? Give them 3 points. They staggered someplace.
4 points.
Yeah. Lenore, I have been waiting all week just to ask you this question. What is the common thread? Thugs, nitwits, halfwits, and dimwits.
Thugs. You were at Thanksgiving at my house.
Yeah, right. My brothers, right?
Thugs, nitwits, halfwits, and dimwits.
Well, they are affectionate names that Mo bestowed upon Larry and Curly from time to time.
Probably, but that's not where we're going here.
Okay, thugs, nitwits, halfwits, and dimwits.
You're going to boo me.
You would never tip a dimwit. No.
Actually, halfwits, nitwits, and dimwits is my law firm that...
I don't think so.
Is it a line from a movie?
It is.
Aha. Thugs, nitwits, halfwits, and dimwits. It's got to be...
Animal House.
No.
No,
it's
not
gotta
that
be
one.
Somebody's... is it a politician speaking the line?
No, it isn't. This is
Is it Groucho Marx speaking?
Oh, Lord, Nora's going to kill herself.
Oh, is it Rodney Dangerfield? Is it from Back to School?
No, it
is not. It's not from Waiting for Godot, is it?
Anyone on the other side? No.
Mm.
No, they're being quiet. I think it's
somebody's description of Congress in some movie or other.
No, it's not Congress. Anybody in the audience have a guess?
Blazing
Saddles. It was. It was the type of men recruited by Hedley Lamarr.
Right. For the Army.
For the Army.
In Blazing Saddles.
Chewing gum online. I hope you brought enough for everyone.
Yeah.
It was great.
Thugs, nitwits, halfwits, and dimwits.
Oh, God.
That's what Hedley Lamarr wanted in Blazing Saddles. Lenore, it was a tribute to you.
Oh, my God, and I didn't get it.
Well,
disappointing.
You'll carry that one home.
Oh, Santa Maria.
try this one, Paula. What's the common thread? Jawed Karim. K-A-R-I-M. J-A-W-E-D Karim. Jack Dorsey. Ray Tomlinson.
Why does this all sound open? Oh.
And Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. Well, okay. Mm. It's all with the internet.
Who's Jack Dorsey? That sounds familiar. Wait a minute.
Ray Tomlinson is sort of listed as basically one of the inventors.
Of the internet.
Yes.
And Mark Zuckerberg.
Well.
Of something specific, really specific.
Email?
Yes, sir. Yes,
email.
Ma'am.
Email.
Email, Facebook.
And then Facebook. Jack Dorsey. Jawed Karim.
So are we? Is one of these Twitter?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Mm.
They started companies. They were CEOs.
It's not
and
just
inventors.
That they started companies.
They were creators and inventors of a new use for the internet.
Did one of them start YouTube?
Yes.
Yes. Okay.
They sure
so
did.
All right.
You know what? The fact that they even got there, I'm going to give you 10 points. Very good. Anyone on the other side want to take a shot at the common thread? Anyone in the audience? First is exactly right.
First?
Email number one was sent by Ray Tomlinson. Facebook ID number one, Mark Zuckerberg.
Oh.
The first tweet was Jack Dorsey's, and the first upload on YouTube
was
Jawed Karim. And thank you very much, Benjamin, for that question. That
great
came
question.
From him.
Great
and 10
question.
Points to you guys. Nice job. And finally, Murray, I've been waiting all week to ask you this. Watch this. He's going to get it. What's the common thread? A manicurist, four waiters, two cleaning ladies, and a ship's engineer.
Oh, sure. This is in A Night at the Opera. This is the stateroom scene. Make that three.
Right. I can't believe you got it that fast.
Thank you.
A manicurist, four waiters, two cleaning ladies, and a ship's engineer. They all fall out of Otis P. Driftwood stateroom in A Night at the Opera. And he got it just like that. Right. Nice job, Mary. 10 points. And let's go on to round four, which is Murray's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Paula, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word micraner. M-I-C-R-A-N-E-R. Micraner. Gentlemen. So many ways to enjoy, says you. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend a live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show and achieve limited fame with a small but dedicated audience. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at SaysYou.net. SaysYou. Briefly, Says You pauses. We'll be right back. Mazengarb giving us some great time with the word micraner. We'll go first to Tony Kahn.
Well, it's not generally known by students of etymology of insects that there really are different names for both the male and the female of the species, although one is generally favored. So you have the grasshopper, but there's actually a grasshoppess. You have a praying mantis and a praying mantur. And you have a gnat and a nanette. Well, our word, what's it, what is the word? Micraner?
Yes.
That is also known among its mates as Skippy, is a male ant of very small size.
A micro ant.
A male ant.
Yeah. A micro ant. Well, you know.
A micro ant. Yes.
Yes. It's a male ant of an unusual,
very small
unusually
size.
Unusually small size. Yeah.
Okay. A puny little male ant. That's a micranor. Could be. Or Lenore, something else.
A micranor is an object that is left inside a body accidentally during a surgery, and you're sewn up with it in there. could be a sponge or a surgical sponge. Where are the tools? And when they write up the surgical notes, they don't necessarily always say what it is, or you come back in later and you say, you know. Anyway,
that's where I left my car keys.
Exactly. But it could be a surgical a sponge that's left inside the body during after surgery.
You leave a sponge in the body during surgery, nobody picks it up. It could be that, or it could be something else. Murray, what say you?
In early recordings,
yes,
like of cylinders, you know, back in the, you know, over 100 years ago, you'll notice in a lot of those musical ensembles there were no drums, right? The International Guitar Duo, which would have been great for music of any occasion, would have been perfect in those days because they didn't have any drums, or if they had somebody who sang really loudly or played a trumpet really loudly, they had to be back from the cone because the stylus would skip off of the wax that was making the enregistration until, and I guess sometime in the 1920s, somebody invented the micranor or micranor or however you pronounce it. But at any rate, it's a stylus, but it's not the playback stylus. It's a recording stylus in the old recording process.
We got a new there. What do you know? It's a recording stylus. In the days of the old recordings, wax recordings, that was the one that recorded things. That was the micranor. It was either that, a sponge left in a body after surgery, or the male ant of very small size.
We can parse this out.
Frankly, I hope it's none of them, but unfortunately, it is one of them, and the choice, Paula, belongs to you.
Well, what fun.
Yes.
All of a sudden, Tony's is looking good.
Yeah, it really is. I mean,
yes, it is.
MIC is K-E-Y.
When it doesn't mean mouse, it often means ant.
It often means ant.
Right. So we think it is the male ant of a certain reduced size.
You're going to go for the obvious.
We're going for the obvious because, well, you know, the object left inside post-surgery. Love the idea, but just don't think so. And I don't know a thing about recording styluses.
So it means nothing to...
It's styli.
It's styli. That's when you left the stylus inside somebody.
Yeah. We think it's Tony, and we're going with that.
Tony, they are determined to go with you. They think a micranor is an ant. A male ant of very small size. Is that, in fact, what a micranor is?
Yes.
Yes, it is. I'm so sorry. I went with the obvious in the hope that they would never go with the obvious, but they foxed us. Let's close tonight with a round of some best-kept secrets. From the following clues, please tell us who's keeping what a secret. Carolyn, television producer Dick Ebersol supposedly paid $50,000 at a Martha's Vineyard auction to discover a secret he can never reveal. What might that secret be?
Would that be the subject of Carly Simon's song, You're So Vain?
Oh, yes, it
would. I cannot believe it. 10 points. Very good. Whoa. He paid $50,000 so Carly Simon would tell him who she was singing about in You're So Vain.
How does he know that she told him the real name?
Right.
It was for charity, so I hope did that. Let's try this one, Tony. In 1792, founder Robert B. Thomas devised a secret formula using tide charts, sunspots, and even astrology to create his unfathomable way to do what?
Make a perfect bagel.
Because when you know those sunspots...
And when it didn't work out, he went into the English muffin business.
Use tide charts, sunspots, and even astrology to create his unfathomable way to do what?
To predict something, I'm guessing.
Yes, sir.
To predict, right, whether it was going to rain tomorrow.
You're almost there.
To predict...
Predict the weather? Is it the weather?
Whether there would be another big flood?
No.
Hurricane, storms, right?
No, predict the weather is true. You're going to get 7 points for that, but there's one more element to this. Why was he doing that?
And what the crops were.
Crops, yeah.
Yeah, he was, yeah. Because?
Because they were thinking about planting.
They were thinking about planting, all right. Does the other side know this?
How do you? Because they were going to make beer, wine.
What?
Beer.
On Thanksgiving.
They were. It was the Farmer's Almanac.
Farmer's Almanac.
It is the method that the Farmer's Almanac uses, and it is their secret formula for doing so.
Oh, that's right.
How to predict the weather. Wow. Every year. All right, Arnie.
Okay.
Here's the tribute to you. Let's see if you can get this. On a tributary of the Delaware River near Palmyra, New Jersey, Jim Bentliff and his cronies sneak out each year to gather the stuff of baseball legend. What's the stuff and why is it secret?
Are we talking pine tar?
No. It's not pine tar.
Pitch? I mean, just... No. Rosin.
Well, you're dancing around it.
Dancing around it.
Yep. Jim Bentliff and his cronies sneak out each year to gather the stuff of baseball legend.
They're cutting
What's the stuff? And
all
why is
the
it
ash
secret?
Trees.
Yeah. It's another great guess. You're going to get some points because you're...
Horse hide. They sneak up on... No.
They sneak up.
I've seen it. I've actually...
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it. Well, he's...
Is there some special kind of dirt?
It absolutely is.
Yep. All right, it's some special kind of dirt.
For pitcher's mounds.
For pitcher's mounds.
You know, I'm going to give you 7 points because you really eventually staggered across the finish line. But I'm going to go to Murray for clarification.
If you ever get to go to a major league clubhouse before a game, go to the umpire's room in the clubhouse where you will see them have a big tin can filled with Delaware River mud with which they rub up every baseball to be used in the game.
That is exactly right.
Wow.
That is exactly right.
It's got to be Delaware River.
It's Lena Blackburn's baseball rubbing mud, used by all major league umpires to prep balls for play since 1950. Mr. Bentliff and his family have been providing a barrel of mud per season to each team at the staggering cost of $24 a barrel.
Plus shipping and handling.
Plus shipping and handling. Try this one, Lenore. This recipe to this company's secret to success is protected both by its clandestine creation and government regulation.
Yep. So is it Coke?
Yes. Now, can you explain why it is protected both by its creation and government regulation?
Why you can't mess with the formula for Coke is because it's patented or copyrighted?
It is patented, of course, but there's more to this than
that. If it fell into the hands of the communists.
Yes.
Well, it used to have cocaine in it,
used to have a drug in it, right?
You know something? That's exactly right. You get the 10 points. It contains coca extract for flavoring, and due to drug-related exporting issues, they are the only company permitted to do so.
Hmm.
So that's where that's how that all comes down. Try this one, Paula. Legend has it, half the ingredients are made in one place, half in another, and they are combined in a third. What mixture is so mingled?
Oh my God, is this because of the secret nature of this formula too?
Oh yes.
Okay, made in one place.
Half the ingredients made in one place, half in another, and they are combined in a third. What mixture is so mingled?
What could that be?
Is it a candy?
No, it is not.
And it's not an Oreo cookie.
Nope.
Sheesh.
Is it a sauce?
It is not a sauce, no. But you're closing in on it here.
Okay. What do you mean you're closing in on
it? Is it
when
something
you say it's
to
not
do
a sauce?
With a fast food recipe?
Yes, it does.
Is it Kentucky Fried Chicken?
It is Kentucky Fried Chicken. 11 herbs and spices. Now, here's my problem with this.
Yeah.
I think you all know my problem with this. If half the ingredients are put in one and half in the other, how can it be 11? And finally, Murray, two professors at England's Cambridge University hold the secret to keeping inviolate the location of the former head of England. What secret do they guard?
The head of England.
The former head of England?
Yes.
Cromwell's grave.
There's a toilet somewhere that's missing?
No, nothing.
Is it something to do with Henry VIII?
Not Henry VIII, no.
The former head of England.
Two professors at...
Now, was this a king?
It was not.
The head of England.
Two professors at England's Cambridge University hold the secret to keeping inviolate the location of the former head of England. What secret do they guard?
So they don't want people to know where he's born. Where he's buried, rather, so that they won't mess up the place or steal.
That's exactly
his, or
right.
Or steal his body. Who would be that interesting?
William the Conqueror.
It is not. I think Paula might have an idea about this.
Oh, it's just an idea.
What is it?
Cromwell.
It is Oliver Cromwell.
Oh, sure.
Very good.
But which part? Which part of Oliver Cromwell? Right,
which part of Oliver Cromwell? The head.
Listen to this. It is the location of Cromwell's head.
Yeah.
Long ago, loyalists separated it from the rest of Cromwell and sought to change it, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
They kept this secret so that no one can do that anymore.
The roundheads.
But that's the answer. Give them 6 points for the answer that they came up with, but it doesn't really matter because on this day, it was Paula Lyon's turn. It was 100 points and a victory. Congratulations. That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Michael, Amy, and all the good folks at the WRVO stations. Thanks so much, folks. Thanks also to Mike Hagerty and the Palace Theater on James for being very gracious hosts. Schur and Salkin write the words. Antonio Oliard captures the moment. And Zach Moore continually exceeds our expectations. We leave tonight with the thought that you know you're from Syracuse if your snowblower has ever gotten stuck on the roof, or if you think that it's safer to drive in winter because the snowbanks protect you from the guardrails. Such is life upstate, and we'll see you all next week. Support for Says You in Syracuse, New York comes from the WRVO stations in Syracuse and Oswego, from Syracuse University, and from the Genesee Grand Hotel, where Says You stays in Syracuse and on the web at GeneseeGrand.com. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
Says You, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
Nashville International Airport connects Middle Tennessee travelers to the world. DNA seeks to learn about the places travelers need to go and improve air service options to take them there. In fact, Nashville International Airport has new nonstop flights to Boston, New York City, Los Angeles, and Cleveland. More information is at flynashville.com, including opportunities for airport-related updates and traveler comments. flynashville.com.
Celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.